Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire.
To the focus for this evening, to announce the winner of the Artist Money 10 Prize. So if you join me in applauding and celebrating the winner, who is Taloy.
In this episode, artist and winner of Artist Mundi 10, Taloy Havini, mines connections between extractive industries in the Pacific Islands and Wales.
And also Llandudno, if I'm saying that right. Llandudno.
What did I say?
You just didn't say in Wales.
Documenting the environmental damage caused by colonial and patriarchal relations with land. In habitat.
My name is Taloy Havini. I'm one of the participating artists in Arts Mundi Art Prize. My presentation is in Llandudno in Mostyn Art Gallery, and there I'm showing one of my film works, which is a three-channel immersive video called Habitat. And beside that presentation is also new work. It was an opportunity for me to include images that are stills from my 16x9 footage, stills from the archive, which hadn't been shown before.
Taloy, you're based in Brisbane, Australia, but you were born in Arawa, the autonomous region of Bougainville. Your practice, as you said, is multidisciplinary, from photography to sculpture, inkjet prints to immersive film installations, and they're always informed by your matrilineal ties to your land and communities. The film you mentioned, Habitat, starts with and centres around a woman called Agata. Who is she and where is she?
So Agata is a landowner, and what she's actually doing is dredging through gravel to find gold. She's in the film seen walking through the tailings, the waste. At the end, she's looking directly into the camera. She sort of confronts the viewer as though to challenge you as a spectator. So when I say that she's a landowner, she's a woman from the Panguna area. In the 60s, large deposits of copper and gold were found by European explorers. So they go back as far as the Spanish, actually. And then the successive colonial powers, so Germans, even Japan was there at one stage through World War II, English, Australians inherited it, and now Papua New Guinea. Panguna Mine became the major company that exports to Canada, America, and essentially just removed all the local landowners to the fringes of this land, all the tailings, the waste. So I was very much born into that in the 80s. I was born in the town that became a mining town. Over time, the local people resisted, picked up arms. The women would protest in front of these companies. And the companies sort of realised, why do these people fight so much for their land? And one of the things about colonialism is that it's a very patriarchal way of relating to land, which is the land was passed through the mail line, and that 6 feet under the ground belongs to the crown, you know, the West. But none of these laws suited the people, our traditional custodians. Land is not dealt like that. Land is actually passed through the female line in many of the societies there. That sort of banded the people together, and they created and mobilized a defense line. And today what you find is that they've kicked out the mining companies, so they haven't been able to return. And so people like Agata are locally mining using their hands. So this is currently contested, and after many years of being shut out, the mining companies are waiting to come back in again. So it's very much something that goes back to colonialism, 60s, 70s, and even now, in 2024, there are still large deposits available, and those companies wanting to get back in there.
And these are companies that people will have heard of, businesses like Konzink Rio Tinto in Australia. And in the film, we move from these lush green and blue colours, these three channels, to that barren grey of the single channel.
Yeah, so Agata, she's not acting, actually, as you would imagine, because she's not got anywhere else to go. Normally she'd be gardening, fishing, and yet all that she has left to do is to stay on her land and to keep looking for gold, because the extractive industries have removed her from this land and yet made this land completely infertile. Extractive industries have essentially robbed her of gardens and a sustainable way of living. I actually met her when I was filming, documenting the area, and I talked to her about what I was doing. And as I was speaking to her and her community, I asked her if I could film her doing what she does every day. And she absolutely said, yeah, sure. Yeah, I was able to ask her and see how she felt about being that symbol of women in Bougainville having our cultural inheritance of land been taken and yet still there, you know, and living with the realities of what they have left, the extractive industries of taking gold and copper out, but leaving all these tailings.
Your practice, as you mentioned, is incredibly research-based. Top those lurid blues, you project plantation, colonial maps. Can you talk a bit about your use of colour and where the colour in that part of the film is drawn from?
When I was printing the photographs from my archive, you know, the printers or the framers, they would say, did you enhance this? It's like, not at all. That bright blue that you so eloquently described, that's the natural copper. That's what happens when dynamite is used to blow up whole mountains and unearths basically this copper leaching into the river. And this is sort of when I first stumbled across this in the nature, in earth, when I was hiking and walking through and wanting to see the extent of the damage and the change to the landscape and the habitats. I was also equally stunned and thinking, wow, is this what this natural material, this amazing copper does when it oxidizes? Just following, as you say, through research, how much corporations are willing to sacrifice human lives for these resources through, you know, removal, displacement, conflict.
I know that you're very interested in the intergenerational transfer of Indigenous knowledge systems. Mapping, for example, has long been used as an instrument of colonial control by 19th century British settler governments across the world, but specifically as well in the Pacific region. Can you talk a bit about how your practice is using technologies of oppression for knowledge, for power, and for self-representation? I'm thinking of, for example, your use of drones and how they were received by elders in your community.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go into the communities with a drone. I actually was asked by the communities to get one. When I got to the bottom of the tailings, which most mines have dams, but because it's a volcanic region, what happened is that the companies decided that making a dam was unsafe. If a volcano were to ruin the dam, the spillage would be drastic. So their idea of being environmentally sound was to just keep blowing up lands and damming seven rivers just to push these tailings down into the ocean. And so a friend of mine who's a surgeon, his mother's people come from down at that river mouth into the ocean, and he urged me to go and document the changes down there. His relatives had met me and taken me through these sort of crocodile-infested rivers. And when we got there, we looked up and I said to them, oh, it'd be good for satellite imagery to see the extent of this damage. And they had already tried, but because there's too much cloud coverage, that's not available to them. They said, if you brought a drone back, we could see that. And so I had to teach myself how to use one, and I went back into the swamp. For the first time, they could see the extent of the damage. What was virgin forest had become a swamp of tailings and waste. This documentation has been used by the community. especially in reports for seeking compensation from the mining company. I sort of want to counter map these colonial mappings, which is mapping used to discover and to plunder, whereas we can also use those tools to look at the changes and to show as evidence over time what the people have lost and how to survive and just plan.
Taloy, you're from the Nakas tribe of Haku people. Before, you've spoken about these relationships with the environment, that the land is our skin, the water is our blood. It makes me think as well of the work of Angela Tiatia, who's currently on show at the National Museum of Scotland, and recently as part of Story Place, an exhibition from artist and curator Tony Albert, who we've previously spoken to on Empire Lines. Curation and collaboration is also part of your practice. Can you talk a bit about Ocean Space at the Venice Biennale in Italy?
So I'm going to be curating an exhibition at Ocean Space in Venice this year in March, which will also open again in April during the Vernissage. And this exhibition is called Restoring Oceania. Curation allows me as an artist to really step back and look at other practices of people and to support other narratives in contemporary art, and especially from Oceania, the crossover between performance and philosophies speak to sort of current issues, but also back to these sort of ancient philosophies around time and space. So one artist is Latai Taumopiao, who's a Tongan artist, who will be doing a major commission for Ocean Space. And beside her will sit very powerful Wahine, Māori architect called Elisa Petaheta. She's going to respond to this sort of planetary crisis through our Pacific ways of relating to each other. These women, fantastic women, I see as leaders and people who can really speak to the urgent need to start restoring our planet, you know, through indigenous ways of relating to land, because it's a very collective, nurturing way of trying living with the planet rather than an extractive way.
Water also runs through the films of John Acompra, another guest on Empire Lines, who will represent Britain this year at the Venice Biennale and who won Artist Mundi 7. This year, though, Taloy, you are the winner of Artist Mundi 10, the UK's largest contemporary art prize based in Cardiff. There are global artists here working across geographies and media this year, as we mentioned, focusing quite specifically on connections to land, contested territories and histories. It was so interesting seeing your work alongside some of your contemporaries and finding overlaps in practice, whether that be Carolina Caicedo's Lightbox or mapping in the work of the Kurdish artist Rushdie Anwar, the films of Alia Farid and Naomi Rinson-Gallardo, whose violent surrealism is inspired by Mesoamerican myth. Seeing your work in this context, in a group context, has it drawn out new connections for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm honoured and privileged to be alongside such an amazing group of artists, especially during the time last year. We took a minute of silence and we spoke in sort of sympathy and calling for peace that's happening in Palestine. You know, most of us come from areas of conflict. I know that what I've been seeking for is the solidarity, and we felt that very much. Rather than a competition, it was more about a solidarity. And I'm just thrilled to be this year's recipient.
You're no stranger to global exhibitions. Habitat has been shown simultaneously as part of Resistors at the Barbican in London, and that will travel to Belgium. And you've previously shown it at the Palais de Tokyo in Paris too. I know you like to sit in the space where people don't know that you're the artist and hear their reactions. Has the work challenged people's perceptions about the Pacific region and the people that live there?
Yeah, absolutely. In that Palais de Tokyo, I heard someone go back out and read the label and come back in and just comment to who they were with, saying, this can't be the Pacific, this isn't the Pacific. It's got to be Africa, because Agatha is this strong black woman looking back at the camera. And I just thought, oh, it is the Pacific. And some of the people that see the work who've been to the Pacific, you know, it sort of breaks those stereotypes that it's not this tropical island where you can go and have a holiday. Well, it is. It has been seen as that. But there are people that live here. These are people's homes. And there have been since the last glacial maximum. People have been living there since 28,000 years. We know that. Science tells us that. And yet within a short life cycle of an extractive industry completely takes that away, that history and that potential to keep living there. The great part of being an artist is like you have these perspectives that you can sort of shine a light on, and people never know when they're coming into an exhibition what they're going to see, you know, that element of surprise.
This is also the first Artist Mundi where there's collaboration across sites in Wales, not just the National Museum, but Chapter in Cardiff and Mostyn, as you mentioned, in North Wales. It's a nation with its own contested relationship with natural resources, the politics of particularly coal, but also water and oil we've spoken about before on an Empire Lines episode with James Marriott. Do you think that the work takes on new meaning for audiences here?
Absolutely. I was privileged to have hung out with Beth Ann Mair, who's from Carnarvon, proud Welsh woman who could speak the language. She had spent part of her childhood in Bougainville, and I had no idea. I'd gone to Clandudno thinking, no one's going to know anything about me, they'll just see the work and then I'll leave. And she did her homework and found me and took me on a tour and spoke to the slate, the history of the quarries, and as you mentioned, all these extractive industries, how the revival of the Welsh language has been such an important symbol for culture and for belonging. There's something there that resonated with me, and so I could go back to Bougainville and tell these stories as well. There was that really beautiful personal exchange that you don't expect as an artist between those areas in the Pacific and also Clandudno, if I'm saying that right.
So, Loy, congratulations, and thank you ever so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Artist Mundi 10 runs at venues across Wales until the 25th of February 2024. Resistors, a lens on gender and ecology, ran at the Barbican in London until the 14th of January and travels to FOMU in Antwerp, Belgium, until the 14th of August 2024. For more, you can read my article. You'll find all the links in the episode notes. Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
I hope that was okay.
You were fantastic.
Okay, great.
Yeah, of course.
No, you were great. You were like, how do you know all that stuff? What's your...
It's my job.
I know.
You've done our homework, huh?
Yeah.
I did do my homework.